Penguin Random House Audio presents Florida. This is the author, Lauren Groff. Ghosts and Empties. I have somehow become a woman who yells. And because I do not want to be a woman who yells, whose little children walk around with frozen, watchful faces, I have taken to lacing on my running shoes after dinner and going out into the twilit streets for a walk, leaving the undressing and sluicing and reading and singing and tucking in of the boys to my husband, a man who does not yell. The neighborhood goes dark as I walk, and a second neighborhood unrolls atop the daytime one. We have few streetlights, and those I pass under make my shadow frolic. It lags behind me, gallops to my feet, gambols on ahead. The only other illumination is from the windows in the houses I pass, and the moon that orders me to look up, look up. Feral cats dart underfoot. Bird of paradise flowers poke out of the shadows. Smells are exhaled into the air. Oak dust, slime mold, camphor. Northern Florida is cold in January, and I walk fast for warmth, but also because, though the neighborhood is antique, huge Victorian houses radiating outward into 1920s bungalows, then mid-century modern ranches at the edges. It's imperfectly safe. There was a rape a month ago. A jogger in her 50s pulled into the azaleas. And a week ago, a pack of loose pit bulls ran down a mother with a baby in her stroller and mauled both, though not to death. It's not the dog's fault, it's the owner's fault, dog lovers shouted on the neighborhood email list, but those dogs were sociopaths. When the suburbs were built, in the 70s, the historic houses in the center of town were abandoned to graduate students who heated beans over Bunsen burners on the heart pine floors and sliced apartments out of ballrooms. When neglect and humidity caused the houses to rot and droop and develop rusty scales, there was a second abandonment to poor people, squatters. We moved here 10 years ago because our house was cheap and had virgin lumber bones, and because I decided that if I had to live in the South with its boiled peanuts and its Spanish moss dangling like armpit hair, at least I wouldn't barricade myself with my whiteness in a gated community. Isn't it dicey? People our parents' age would say, grimacing when we told them where we lived. And it took all my willpower not to say, do you mean black or just poor? Because it was both. White middle-classness has since infected the neighborhood, though, and now everything is frenzied with renovation. In the past few years, the black people have mostly withdrawn. The homeless stayed for a while because our neighborhood abuts Bo Diddley Plaza, where, until recently, churches handed out food and God, and where Occupy rolled in like a tide and claimed the right to sleep there, then grew tired of being dirty and rolled out, leaving behind a human flotsam of the homeless in sleeping bags. During our first months in the house, we hosted a homeless couple we only ever saw slinking off in the dawn. At dusk, they would silently lift off the latticework to the crawl space under our house and then sleep there, their roof our bedroom floor. And when we got up in the middle of the night, we tried to walk softly because it felt rude to step inches above the face of a dreaming person. On my nighttime walks, the neighbors' lives reveal themselves. the lit windows domestic aquariums. At times, I'm the silent witness to fights that look like slow dancing without music. It is astonishing how people live, the messes they sustain, the delicious whiffs of cooking that carry to the street, the holiday decorations that slowly seep into daily decor. All January, I watched a Christmas bouquet of roses on one mantle diminish until the flowers were a blighted shrivel in the water-green scum, a huge Santa on a stick still beaming merrily out of the ruins. Window after window nears, freezes with its blue fog of television light or its couple hunched over a supper of pizza, holds as I pass, then slides into the forgotten. I think of the way water gathers as it slips down an icicle's length, pauses to build its glossy drop, becomes too fat to hang on, plummets down. There is one mostly windowless place in the neighborhood that I love nevertheless because it houses nuns. There used to be 6 nuns there, but attrition happened, as it does with very old ladies. And now there are only 3 kindly sisters squeaking around that immense space in their sensible shoes. A realtor friend told us that when it was built in the 1950s, a bomb shelter was lowered into the porous limestone of the backyard. And during sleepless nights when my body is in bed but my brain is still out walking in the dark, I like to imagine the nuns in full regalia in their shelter, singing hymns and spinning on a stationary bike to keep the light bulb sputtering on, while above ground, all has been blasted black and rusted hinges rasp the wind. Because the nights are so cold, I share the streets with few people. There's a young couple who jog at a pace slightly slower than my fast walk. I follow them, listening to their patter of wedding plans and fights with friends. Once I forgot myself and laughed at something they said, and their faces owled, unnerved, back at me. Then they trotted faster and took the first turn they found, and I let them disappear into the black. There's an elegant, tall woman who walks a Great Dane the color of dryer lint. I am afraid that the woman is unwell because she walks rigidly, her face pulsing as if intermittently electrified by pain. I sometimes imagine how, should I barrel around a corner to find her slumped on the ground, I would drape her over her dog, smack his withers, and watch as he, with his great dignity, carried her home. There is a boy of 15 or so, tremendously fat, whose shirt is always off and who is always on the treadmill on his glassed-in porch. No matter how many times I find myself striding past his window, there he is, his footsteps pounding so hard I can hear them from 2 blocks away. Because all the lights are on inside the house, to him there is nothing beyond the black in the window. And I wonder if he watches his reflection the way I watch him, if he sees how with each step his stomach ripples as if it were a pond into which someone had tossed a fist-sized stone. There's the shy, muttering homeless lady, a collector of cans, who hoists her clanging bags on the back of her bicycle and uses the old concrete blocks in front of the grander houses to mount her ride. The waft of her makes me think of the wealthy southern dames in dark silk who once used those blocks to climb into their carriages, emitting a similarly intimate feminine stink. Hygiene may have changed with time, but human bodies have not. There's the man who hisses nasties as he stands under the light outside a bodega with bars over his windows. I put on my don't fuck with me face, and he has yet to do more than hiss. But there is a part of me that is more than ready, that wants to use what's building up. Sometimes I think I see the stealthy couple who lived under our house, the particular angle of his solicitousness, his hand on her back. But when I come closer, it is only a papaya tree bent over a rain barrel or 2 boys smoking in the bushes, turning wary as I pass. And then there's the therapist.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?